It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. The 10th day of September 2019, and a reminder that summer is not over yet. Yes, it's one of those near 90-degree days here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Downright sauna-like. But I'll not complain, because all too soon I'll be talking about seeing my breath in the studio here. Yeah. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic Tuesday, Trump Panic Tuesday on the horn, and we had... I've got a feeling that the days are going to be crammed full like they were yesterday for the foreseeable future. Because last night could have been a six-hour program, because I finished with oodles of stuff that were yet available for discussion. But there's very little carryover even to today. A little bit, but not a lot. Brother Deacon Asa says, hot aboard the USS Trump Tanic on both steam catapults. Nobody abandoned ship. We'll show that iceberg who's boss. I showed John Bolton who's boss. God, it just gets to the point. I mean, exhausting is one word for it, sure. And one of the things when we were talking about his congenital intellectual disability, he's been that. Stupid since he was born. Oh, who's mother smart boy? Aye, he's got a big brain. Yeah, sure. So there was a tweet yesterday, or maybe the day before, when Mark Sanford, of whom we have made no small amount of fun, because he kind of earned it, when Mark Sanford announced that he, too, would join a primary field in the Republican primary to try to damage, if not unseat, Donald Trump, that makes William Weld, Joe Walsh, who is not an ordinary average guy, and Mark Sanford. Oh, wait, I'm about to screw up. This program, like every program, begins with gratitude. So thanks go out to our 10th day of the month subscribers. Thank you to Don, and thank you to Judy. Thanks also to Daniel and Cecilia. Thank you to both of you. That means that the fundraising goal, the deficit, as it were, has fallen... Our catch-up number is $405, and there's a big nasty internet bill that is due this Friday, and we really need to close that gap. So we got $405 to go. The PayPal interface is over at headon.live. Just as Yuki showed us yesterday, there's a have a show on me function. If you'd like to take care of one day's programming, you can do that. Or, you know, we'll all just work together and we'll chip away at it until we've got it down to zero and keep moving through the month. How's that sound? Okay. But if you'd like to be, and you know, this is that time of the month when we can use subscribers too. So if you click, make this a recurring or make the, you know, a recurring payment, whatever the language is, you know, put in $10 and zowie, you will be setting yourself back less than half of one of those indigestion-inducing deep-fried hash brown patties from McDonald's per day. Because it's less than 48 cents per hour or per day and less than 15 cents per hour of programming for this non-commercial, non-capitalist attempt at long-term conversation and progressive liberal broadcasting, okay? So back to what I mentioned, Mark Sanford announcing that he was in the race, and, well, he just couldn't help himself. He had to chime in. Nitwit Nero did. The man with the congenital intellectual disability.
When the former governor of the great state of South Carolina, Mark Sanford, was reported missing, only to then say he was away hiking on the Appalachian Trail, then was found in Argentina with his flaming dancer friend, it sounded like his political career was over. It was, but then he ran for Congress and won, only to lose his re-elect after I tweeted my endorsement on Election Day for his opponent. But now, take heart, he's back and running for President of the United States.
Well, first of all, Nitwit Nero has said no, he will not debate any of those three candidates. Do you wonder why? I mean, this is a guy who had 5 deferments from Vietnam. He's not going to engage in any conflict. He doesn't absolutely have to. And I'll bet you he won't. I bet you he won't debate the Democratic nominee either. In which case, the Democratic nominee should just be given 3 nights with the vice president getting 1 night to sit there and talk to the American people and make the case for getting rid of this Russian asset, emphasis on the word ass, squatting in the White House. But the best part of that tweet was the,
he was found in Argentina with his flaming dancer friend.
I think what he was trying to do there, if there's any method to this madness at all, by using the word flaming, he was trying to imply that Mark Sanford, I guess, is gay? But that is probably ascribing too much thought, too much cognitive skill, too much intellectual ability to this deeply intellectually disabled man. Flaming dancer. The woman was Argentine. What he meant was flamenco dancer. Only thing is, she isn't and wasn't. And flamenco is something that happens in Spain, whereas Argentina, unless I get a correction email from Flavio. He's our correspondent on all things South American and Latin. His brain, what remains of it, was reaching for the fact that Argentina is famous for some kind of form of dance. Not flamingo, not flaming, not flamenco.
The locals have a name for them. Jose Grecos de Muertos. Flamenco dances of death.
No. He was reaching with what remnant of his tormented brain remains for the tango. The tango. But he couldn't get there because he's... him. So that's just, you know, that's just one piece of the puzzle. And it's a big puzzle. And of course, I alluded earlier to the great big news of the day. Namely, the fact that he got rid of John Bolton. John Bolton said, no, he didn't fire me, I quit. But he said that this morning you fired him. Randy says, sorry to go against a meme, but Trump doesn't apparently do his own tweets. He's scared of electronic devices because he's paranoid that the electronic devices are listening to him. This according to one of Rick Smith's guests. There may be an element of truth to that. He does not do all of his tweets, the ones that are cogent and have some semblance of grammatical correctness. Many of those are done by Dan Scavino. But the flaming dancer business, that's pure Trump. If he doesn't send them, he dictates them. And they are faithfully, apparently, faithfully typed in. Scott in San Diego, Trump's condition is genital. He's got the attitude of a dick. Fucks everyone, brags about how big he is, and thinks the axis of the universe runs directly through his groin. Well, there went dinner in the Eastern time zone, Scott. Thanks for that. I understand you and Billable Rick and Joe from Cleveland will be sitting down for a repast here in the next hour or so. I'll see what I can do toward doing for you what you just did for the Horn community's dinner in the Eastern time zone. Okay, so this just came in from Ralphs, who is a month in, month out, dedicated supporter of the network. Starting on the 13th, okay, this doesn't happen yet. Starts Friday. Starting on the 13th, I will double any $10 subscriber up to $50. This month, I hope someone starts their subscription. Hugs to the whole community. Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs. That's huge. And the offer will continue until the 20th. So, up to 5 new subscribers get their subscriptions doubled. Because that span there between the 13th and the 20th gets a little sparse. Thank you, Ralphs. 13th to the 20th. Please bear that in mind, because especially if you're new to the program, and you have the ability, this has got to be one of the biggest media bargains in America today. That was good, though, says Darlene in Connecticut. Scott deserves a cowbell. He got me laughing. Okay, on the recommendation of committee member Darlene in Connecticut, a member of the sorority of Leans and an original founding member of Queen Tracy's Reverse Oreo Society, Scott gets a cowbell. The dance of unbridled passion, says Ron in Raleigh. Did you know that the tango was outlawed at one time because it was considered lewd and suggestive? Well, only if you're doing it right. And at one point in time, I think kilts and bagpipes were outlawed in Ireland for being, and Scotland too, for that matter, I think, for being just a little too revolutionary. and occasionally atonal. No one would ever suggest that a kilt or a bagpipe was lewd or suggestive. Oh, it's going to be one of those nights, isn't it? That's okay. Meanwhile, Kyle in Kentucky Stan, flaming dancer friend. I'm surprised this didn't get more media coverage. Seems like it would be hard to dance if you're on fire. Or maybe the dancer friend was a flaming gay, in which case the Republicans might all have a conniption simultaneously. Wishful thinking. Oh, but conniptions are what they're good at. Steve in New York says, I'm pretty sure Covfefe was his. Yeah, that Covfefe is, I think a bunch of them are his. Maybe he's using text-to-speech, or speech-to-text, doing dictation. Maybe he's typing with the little nitwit Nero, who knows? But yeah, it's a busy evening. A little breaking news from this afternoon before we get into the madness of the madness of everything else. Looks like climate change in the United States is taking it on the chin again in a catastrophic moment. CNN reporting black smoke and flames belched. They belched, I tell you. They didn't billow, they belched. Tuesday afternoon from a derailed train in DuPont, Illinois, across from St. Louis. St. Clair County Emergency Management Agency said on Facebook, first responders are on scene of a multiple train car derailment on Carondelet Avenue. They don't know what the train was transporting, but the one photograph provided shows one of those long, cylindrical black tanker cars that so often spells bomb train. Power's been cut off in the neighborhood and schools have been evacuated. More as it develops. Oh, I was thinking more about the bagpipes, Randy. Randy says, I've never heard of an atonal kilt, unless the colors clash. Are you kidding? It's not an Irish or a Scottish plaid unless the colors clash. They clash by definition. Ooh, Yubi, I want to pick the next color. I want to pick the next color. Ooh, he's tiny and plaid. And again, before we get, you know, Congress is back in session. Not that Mitch McConnell intends to do anything about the those pair of Democratic House bills that are sitting in a pool of innocent, congealed blood on his desk. And I think he probably dips his pinky in it and gets a taste every now and then. Okay. The letters are going out. Brother Deacon Asa has a message for Scott. Please tell Scott that he'll be receiving a strongly worded letter from my lawyer's firm, namely Ditcher, Quick, and Hyde, for copyright infringement where it concerns genital wart jokes about Trump. I'm on the record on this program for dubbing Trump's the genital wart presidency. And then there's also the fact that we refer to him as Chlamydia Claudius. So please be advised, Scott. Of course, you've got counsel with you this afternoon, so he may respond and say, do your doggondest to those pettifoggers at Ditcher, Quick, and Hyde. I had a note from Lady B before airtime. Just another day in Merca. As you know, Lady B is out in the greater Colorado Springs area. This is the subject line, just this. Students charged for alleged threat to Colorado Springs Middle School. And in fact, two schools in the Springs area have been put on a heightened state of alert after a photo circulated on social media of a high schooler and some middle schoolers posing with what appeared to be guns and a message that said, "Don't go to school." They did a complete threat assessment. Police and faculty don't think there's any danger to students. But they've heightened but they've heightened security just in case, because it's Merca and it's 2019. Saban Middle School had extra security on campus Monday because of the photo I mentioned a minute ago showing five students posing with what looked like guns with a caption stating people should not go to school on Monday. Those students were identified and charged, even though they're, you know, middle schoolers. Lady B writes, that's my beautiful great niece's middle school. She just started sixth grade. It was just a bunch of students fucking around on Facebook, but you don't fuck around like that. And I'll add, no, not in Merca, not in 2019, not in a country held hostage by the most powerful, wealthiest, politically connected domestic terror organization in the world, namely, in to wit, the National Ruble Association. Lady B says, it's actually too early in the day for my PTSD to kick in. That's why I dope myself to sleep at night so that the mornings are a bit better. Bob, I've always given a damn about this, and I know how vulnerable we all are, but damn, God damn it, I don't support gun culture. I want my legislators to act. I want to expand access to mental health care. I want change. Why are they fucking with mine? I raised this girl. I saw her 8-year-old sister come out of her mother's body. I'm the emergency contact. I'll drop everything. I'll step in front of a goddamn train. I sacrifice for them. My sister's grandchildren are just as good as my own. They are my life. This shit has got to stop. And I was reminded of something. You know, kids, especially when they get, you know, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh, eighth, the hormones start kicking in. A lot of the little boys find their, they get in touch with their inner asshole. And in some cases, the little girls, you know, learn how to be terrifyingly mean. And I just, I hearkened back to probably 1974, 1975. And before I do this, this is only a historical recreation, a recollection. I don't know if kids sang it around the rest of the country. Maybe we sang it as prepubescents in Alabama because of the tune. But I can remember kids singing, and it was sung enough that obviously it found a brain cell to live on in my mind. I remember kids singing to the tune of the battle hymn of the Republic, "Mine eyes have seen the glory of the burning of the school. We have fired all the teachers. We have broken all the rules. We expect to hang the principal tomorrow afternoon in the basement of the school." It scans. It really does. You don't want me to sing. Granted, we've got a $405 deficit here, but I'm not at the threatening to sing stage yet. The point being, however, that if a gang of little pre-adolescent smartasses using the high technology that exists today were to stand in front of a camera with it rolling and sing that, well, they might very well find themselves in Sing Sing. Because this is a different America. Back then, I was told that was rude and my parents did not care to hear it, and I said, okay. And so it didn't. But I could hear it on any given day of the week, and I seem to recall maybe the last day of fourth grade or fifth grade or sixth, a whole bunch of little pre-adolescents singing that at the tops of their lungs, exiting the school. But now, I mean, five kids, one high schooler, bunch of middle schoolers, and they posed with something appearing to be guns. We don't know if they were real guns or if they were toy guns. But if they were toy guns, well, it really doesn't matter, because a toy gun was enough to get Tamir Rice real dead real fast. And we are a nation that is beside itself with fear. What I used to describe as the coward nation. I still do that. Not C-O-W-A-R-D, but C-O-W-E-R-E-D. The coward nation. We cower in fear of where the people who have unleashed the worst elements of our national id will take us next. Because that, as Lady B clued me in, was Colorado Springs. But how about the first congressional district of Texas, where the elected representative is a man dedicated, a man who is a wholly owned subsidiary of the aforementioned National Ruble Association. I'm talking, of course, about Louis Asparagus Gohmert, who spends his every waking day either worrying about how gay people have sex, worrying about the poor precious fetuses, fretting about there not being enough guns in American hands, in American homes, or, of course, losing his shit over imaginary people with EBT cards going through the line at HEB with shopping carts full of frozen Alaskan king crab legs, which is hard-working constituents, of course, can't afford to eat because they're standing back there with a pound of beans and a pound of rice and a half a pound of hamburger because patriotism, because Merca. Well, police in Fort Worth, Texas, say they may have averted, another firearms-fueled nightmare. A 27-year-old man's father called Fort Worth police. Officer Buddy Calzada of that institution said that the father reported the 27-year-old man wanted to kill many people. He wanted to do something that was very similar that took place in the Midland-Odessa area. And he basically wanted to mimic that. He was serious enough about it, the 27-year-old, that he went to the bank and withdrew somewhere between $600 and $700 and then started going gun shopping. But he kept failing background checks. So then, knowing enough that he knew that there would be no background checks on a private transaction, he started just trying to buy one willy-nilly. And I'll bet you in Texas, like in West Virginia, that's really not that difficult. But in Fort Worth, they have something they call a crisis intervention team. And they finally caught up to him west of downtown Fort Worth. Officer Landon Rollins had knowledge of the man. He said the father was extraordinarily worried and he feared a mass casualty incident. That takes so much courage to be able to do that on your own family and to reach out to law enforcement for that. It is said that the 27-year-old man has a number of mental health issues and has been taken to a local mental health clinic where he is allegedly receiving treatment. Although, do please remember, it's Texas, which has the single highest uninsured population in the United States of America because Republicans in Texas goddamned well want it that way. At the same time that that happened, the mayor of Fort Worth, Betsy Price, and the interim police chief, Ed Krause, were in Washington, D.C., begging lawmakers to try to tighten up the ease of access with which people like this 27-year-old man can get their hands on guns. There were 200 mayors in Washington, D.C., making that plea. Closing the gun show loophole, background checks on every transaction, red flag laws. Mayor Price said background checks are nonpartisan and should be a no-brainer. She went on to say that they were told that the president's team, which basically means Donald Trump and Wayne LaPierre, along with Massacre Mitch, Moscow Mitch McConnell, were looking at it, which translates as have no intention of doing anything whatsoever about it. Darlene in Connecticut says, you got to figure, though, that Trump is biting back, saying worse than flaming friend to refer to Mark Sanford's brown-skinned Argentinian extramarital. After all, Sanford heave-hoed his nice lily-white wife and lily-white existence to rendezvous with Miss Flaming Friend along the Tallahassee Trail. Of course, if a Democratic governor ever did what Sanford did, it would have permanently deep-sixed his political career. No, Miss Flaming Friend earned Sanford a seat in the House of Representatives, and now a presidential bid. Yeah, we had a lot of fun with Mark Sanford when he was hiking the Appalachian Trail. In fact, that's become a watchword for, or another way of saying that someone is having an affair with someone who isn't their good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christian spouse. And then there's the fact that he tweeted anything at all about anyone's marital infidelity. Considering that Stormy Daniels and that other woman whose name I can't remember are about two of the only people whom Donald Trump has ever paid who were actually competent at doing what they were paid to do. And all of this is just surface material. This is just background noise. I'm grateful, make no mistake, deeply grateful that I'm not sitting here talking right now about 13 or 27 or 52 people being dead in Fort Worth. They're everywhere. And I don't envy the cop who has to walk up and say, hey, bub, heard you want to do a mass shooting. It's kind of how I used to feel about, and still do, about the DNR officers in this state. Here in about a month or so, they, wearing brown uniforms, will be walking around in the woods looking for people who are already carrying firearms to make sure that they're not hunting Bambi illegally or squirrels or whatnot. And then, well, since I'm trying to do everything in my possible, everything in my power to not go straight down the Trump rabbit hole, there's a story that I was kind of, you know, I had written hold for prayer meeting Wednesday on it. Thanks, Sparky. Sparky sent me a picture of the burning train. Yeah, it sure does look like a bomb train tanker car. Burns like one, too. As Randy and PA pointed out, you know, here's another Hollywood meme that you generally won't see contradicted on your TV. Explosions are generally smoky affairs, and not like depicted in the movies. There was one Bally Cafe terrorist bombing about 15 years ago that was caught on tape. It was quickly pulled from the TV news, not for its goriness, but because it depicted a smoky explosion. But that doesn't fit the meme. But there's no way that a tanker car full of old godforsaken tar sands goo, for instance, doesn't smoke. Smoke is the product of incomplete combustion. And so, naturally, you're going to have that. Thanks, Sparky. Thanks for sending that along. By the way, if you want to participate in the merry, wacky, zany, multimedia, real-time extravaganza that happens in the chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, run on by headon.live, click on chat room, pick out a screen name and a password. And Anatole and Jimmy and Squeaky will all be there to say howdy, and so will Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has today, in fact, folded space to become Man Cave. You know, he's got to do that every now and then, lest his powers wane. And big thanks going out to Gary and to Jack in Shreveport. Thanks, guys. The fundraising goal is now at $305. That's a big damn deal. Another 105, and we're done with yesterday, and we finally knocked out the last $5 of Friday. Thanks, Gary. Thanks, Jack. Thanks a ton. Yeah, did I not mention the asparagus with Louis Gohmert? I mean, I hardly ever say his name that I don't refer to him as Louis Asparagus Gohmert. It's not off topic. There are no topics here, Darlene. Darlene in Connecticut asks, briefly off topic, but what does an all-black woolly worm signify in terms of the impending winter? I'm seeing one right now in front of my house. Means you're screwed. Because usually it'll be black on one end, black on the other, brown in the middle, or black and brown, or brown and black, or the one I saw was black on one end, brown in the middle, black on the other. The black is the bad part of winter. That's where you're up to your eyeballs in snow. Or freezing temperatures or whatnot. Now, before anybody... the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department's liable to figure this out sooner or later. Those caterpillars actually turn from brown to black or black to brown through the course of their life cycle. And who knows? You know, maybe there is a distant relationship between maybe how much rain there's been, how hot the temperatures have been. But they can be any number of colors at any point in the year. But this is the time of year you start. Jesus, it kind of blew my mind. I was driving along US 19, which is the highway that has the New River Gorge Bridge on it. And so when you cross the bridge, you get a pretty wide panorama of the local foliage. And usually the time of year when we expect to see the real explosion of autumn colors is second, third week in October, at least it's supposed to be. There are, and maybe it's just because I was tuned into it, but there's a lot of leaves already falling. The wild cherry tree outside the Fabulous Horn Studio door, which is right next to the Fabulous Horn Studio color weather window, it's almost completely empty. The leaves are down. And the poplars are going from green to gold already. I'm expecting a tough winter. In response to my explanation, Darlene writes back simply, "Shit." Well, I mean, it is Connecticut. All black woolly worm asks Steve in New York, "Time to stock up on bucket pudding." Bucket pudding references always get a jingle. Flavio says, not many brown people in Argentina. Argentinians are painfully white. They're either of Spanish, Italian, German, or Polish extraction. There were no African slaves in Argentina since there was no slavery, unlike Brazil. And many of the indigenous Native American Argentinians were killed in raids in the 19th century. Jesus. Yeah, one of my favorite movies is still Jeremy Irons and Robert De Niro in The Mission. But that's Paraguay, isn't it? I mean, it's right up there by the Argentine-Paraguay kind of... some of the best location shooting I've ever seen. Magnificent. Randy in PA says, I asked Rick Smith once, who knows some cops, what the cops thought of the assault weapons, and he said that many of the cops, being right-wingers, are supportive of the owning of assault weapons and didn't see them as a significant threat to their lives. Well, there are others who don't. But a lot of them are right-wingers. There's no getting around that. Jimmy wants to know in the chat room, what the heck is a woolly worm? Y'all don't have woolly worms out there? It's a really creepy, furry, black or black to brown, brown to black caterpillar. A couple inches long, usually. And I think their little spines of their caterpillar wooliness may even be venomous. I'm not sure. The things we get into on a Trump-tanic Tuesday. Now, like I said, I had marked this the way you mark in a restaurant, you've got a really sketchy piece of steak. You wrap it in butcher paper and you take your Sharpie and you write, "Hold for well done." Because anybody who orders a well-done steak doesn't care about steak, and since it's going to be turned into a piece of shoe leather anyway, nobody's going to be able to tell if it was a quality cut or not. So I had written "hold for prayer meeting Wednesday" on this one, but it's not going to last because it's just getting worse and worse and worse. Yesterday, oh, really? Are we going there? The black part of the woolly worm represents the bad part of winter, asks Asa. Why does the black part have to represent something negative, Bob? I'm asking for a West Coast friend. I know. I made reference to the little black cat around here. Why's it got to be the little black cat, Bob? Yeah, that's right. Woolly bear, also known as woolly bears, Anatole points out. But there was a big, big, big splashy story in Politico yesterday. And I mean, it's long and it's detailed and it's got lots of stuff in it. It's some real live, no kidding journalism. And it was reported by a young man who is a graduate of Jerry Falwell University, otherwise known as Liberty University. Sit, Liberty, sit. And it went over the fact that it started out as kind of a goofy idea on the part of Jerry Falwell Sr. And if I have any gripes with the article, it's that it paints him in sort of earnest fatherly tones when he was the architect of just about, between him and Newt Gingrich, the two of those were architects of the nastiest aspects of our political culture now. And it speaks kindly of Jerry Falwell Jr., and it talks about how Liberty University grew from a cockamamie idea in Jerry Sr.'s head, with no endowment and little value, to the point that today it's got something on the order of 100,000 students, most of them participating in an online learning dodge, a $2 billion endowment that is that's the envy of no small number of real institutions of higher learning. Vast real estate holdings. And it's all headed up by Jerry Falwell Jr., whom this article indicates is, well, he and Trump are kind of birds of a feather because they're both serial grifters. Go to Politico and read it. I'll save, you know. Like I said, it's a very long article. It talks about how Jerry Falwell Jr. pretty much pushed his buddy, or his brother. His brother was given Thomas Road Baptist Church, which is where Jerry Falwell Sr. got his start as a Baptist minister. And Jerry Jr. got Liberty University. And the article details in really fine, granular form the extent to which Jerry Jr. has turned it into basically a cash machine for himself and his family, especially his son, Jerry Falwell III, whom they lovingly refer to as Trey, who is a vice president of Liberty University. Now, Liberty University is Christian, 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 Christian. And by Christian, I mean monumentally hypocritical Southern Baptist kind of Christian. For instance, at Liberty University, Jerry Falwell U, JFU, Jesus FU, dancing is verboten. It's reminiscent of the old joke about the preacher who's having an affair with the church secretary. And they're getting it on hot and heavy. And at one point in time, he hoists her up and props her legs on his arms. And they're just going to town. And then all of a sudden they stop because they realize they're standing in front of the pitcher window. And he dumps her on the ground and jumps, lays down on the floor with her. And she says, "Pastor Whackbottom, why'd you do that?" He said,
we were in front of the window. They could have thought we were dancing.
See? Yeah. Well, dancing is verboten at Jerry Falwell University. And drinking? Well, drinking will get you plumb expelled from that institution of medieval learning. I mean, you might be 21 years old. You might be a senior there at Jerry Falwell University, and somebody can see you hoisting up a can of Bud Light, and the next thing you know, 4 years of your academic career down the toilet because you've been expelled, and they keep the money, and you don't get the degree because you was a drinking, which is again the teachings of Jerry Falwell and Jesus H. Christ. Well, there's only one problem. Whilst in Miami, we can file this under What Does God Need with the Starship, or Where Did Jesus Say to Build a Water Slide? What Jerry Falwell needed to be doing in Miami when he runs a hustle of a basically correspondence course school in the hills of the Appalachians in Virginia, it wasn't abundantly clear. What was clear, however, is that I guess at the end of the day, by way of relaxation, Jerry and Trey, and apparently Trey's good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, traditional, family values, one man and one woman wife, well, they went to a lounge in Miami that was called Wall. You know, when you're in a real hip place, they name bars things like that. Wall. There may be another one just a block down called, you know, Eggplant. Around the corner from Kumquat. Two blocks over from Rutabaga, which is just a mile down the beach from Post and Lintel. But it was a big social scene, Wall. And there's and because it's Miami, there's always somebody there to document the fabulous and the beautiful people who attend. And in this case, it was an outfit called World Red Eye. And they were there shooting commemorative photos of people enjoying their night at Wall. And so in the story, being a good journalist, the reporter told Jerry Falwell Jr., look, I've got these pictures of you at a lounge called Wall in Miami. And Jerry Falwell Jr. said, damn lie. Never been there. You're clearly mistaken. If you'll provide me the photos, I'll never give them back to you. If you'll provide me the photos, I can show you where they've obviously been photoshopped. Now, you might recall that Jerry Falwell Jr. has previous photography problems. Because it wasn't that long back that we had the story about Jerry Falwell Jr. using the services of Michael Cohen to suppress some salacious photos that had gotten out. When pressed about it, Jerry Falwell Jr. said, well, there is no photo of me And there's no photo of me crisis. Well, as the Politico article points out, no, it's not. It's photos of Mrs. Falwell. Becky. Of course, she's a Becky. And there had been a little grift, a little dodge, that involved a university funds being used to partially finance a gym ownership for the personal trainer who had been helping Jer and Beck get all buff-like. And Jer screwed up with his technology and wound up sending a semi-salacious photo of Beck in a French maid's costume around to some of those good, God-fearing, upstanding, etc. And went into immediate damage control mode, but apparently the photos got out enough that he needed the help of Michael Cohen in suppressing them. You'll also find, if you read the article, that people there are about tired of hearing Jerry Falwell Jr. talk about what a real cocksman he is. And how he makes Becky hoot like a barn owl every time he stoops her. But back to Wall. Because as it saith in Jerry's holy book, pride goeth before a fall. Or perhaps pride goeth before the wall. Because when Jerry said, those photos aren't me, and I've never been to Wall, and they were photoshopped, and obviously it's a demonic attempt to tear down God's work at Liberty University. Harumph! Well, word got back to World Red Eye, who pride themselves on taking pictures of people and getting the names right on the people they take pictures of. So they went back through their archives at World Red Eye. Oops! Because it's not just that there's a picture of Trey Falwell and his traditional family values, one man and one woman, God-fearing, upstanding Christian wife, Sarah. And he's wearing, I mean, we're talking about Miami, okay? He's wearing a checkered shirt that would look more appropriate down on the farm. I'm sure it's downright hip up there in Lynchburg, Virginia. But it looks as out of place as a suit of armor in Miami. And lo and behold, he's got a glass in his hand. And there's a pretty obvious wedge of lime in that glass. And a pair of little cocktail straws are sticking out of it. It's what you and I would often refer to as a highball glass. And it's pretty well empty because he's holding it with his thumb over the top and then his thumb ain't wet. And him and his traditional family values, one man, one woman wife, Sarah, are both festooned with those little glow stick halos. She's got hers around her head like a headband and he's got his around his neck like a necklace, looking like a couple of coastal elite heathens. And Sarah, well, Sarah is holding a great big neon green margarita glass and grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. and wearing a little bitty, gauzy bit of nothing of a dress that would probably get your average woman at Falwell University back in Lynchburg, she'd probably have to walk around with a scarlet A embroidered on a skimpy little thing like that. Jerry Falwell would probably call her out at convocation as a hussy and a Jezebel. Well, over at World Red Eye, the photographer in question was a little put out. That the veracity of his work had been called into question. His name is Seth Browernick, and he founded World Red Eye. And in response to the claim that the photos were faked or photoshopped, he said, "For 21 years, I've maintained an impeccable reputation for documenting Miami Beach's storied social scene. We wholly reject Jerry Falwell Jr.'s baseless allegation in yesterday's Politico report by Brandon Ambrosino that one of our pictures was photoshopped or manipulated in any fashion. We, in fact, did not know Politico's purpose for licensing the image, and were as surprised as anyone to discover that Mr. Falwell was among the partygoers we photographed on July 19th, 2014 at Wall Lounge," because they got date and time and all of that. "As a result, we reviewed all the images we have from the event and discovered an additional 4 photos." God damn it, Jerry. They never got around to teaching the first law of holes, did they? Yeah, Jerry, your daddy Jerry told you all about how to create civil strife and division in the United States, but he didn't tell you that when you're in a fucking hole, quit digging. Shut your prideful mouth and start working on damage control. But no, not Jer Jr., and not the little poisonous nut that falls off the tree, Trey. Oh, hell no. Standing right there for the photographer. As a result, we were, like I said, and found four more photos that include Mr. Falwell and 2 more of his son. And it couldn't not be Jerry Falwell Jr. He might as well be wearing a sign that says, "Hi, I'm Jerry Falwell Jr." But I just want to know what's going to happen with Trey and Sarah. And I guess Becky wasn't there. Maybe skimpy little French maid costumes with those cute little ruffled panties and the petticoats. Maybe that was just a little too over the top for Club Wall Lounge in Miami Beach. And hey, look, Scary Jerry, who is right there on the ground in that same self-same location, says Club Wall South Beach correspondent checking in. "Wall is decadent as fuck. Ain't no lounge. More Studio 54-ish. Frankly, I've never had the quality coke it takes to get into Wall. It's more a bottle and decadence club. Especially since Mokai, around the corner down the street, got caught by animal control with a live horse." Just wow. Oh, don't be telling Jerry about that. He'll be taking Becky there for the donkey show, next thing you know. These sleazy grifters. These followers of the Prince of Peace. It's a good thing he's not real. Any of it. Or else the lightning, if you installed lightning bolts or lightning rods all around Lynchburg, Virginia, there'd still be a few thousand found their way through to Jer and Beck and Trey and Sarah. Oh, ye generation of vipers! They were there, by the way, because I guess it was a big deal, and I guess Jerry Falwell Jr. is a little hipper than me. Okay, a lot hipper than me. Because they went there, because on July 19th, 2014, they were there to see some famous DJ. And I guess that matters. Thanks for the background there, Scary Jerry. Bottle and Decadence Club. Well, Trey and Sarah sure looked like they were having a decadent time of it. But that's not the end of the story. You know, it's again, with the Ginsus. But wait, there's more. So Jer finds out that the photos are going around, and this is where citizen activism comes into play. Jerry Falwell Jr. found out that the photos were going around. So he got hold of another cat who is discussed inside the article, the Politico article by Mr. Ambrosino. A guy named John Gauger. No, really, G-A-U-G-E-R. John Gauger, who, with not particularly an impressive skill set, somehow found his way being elevated through the Falwell hierarchy until he's the head of IT at Falwell U, otherwise known as FU. And he commanded, Jerry Jr. did, Jerry Jr. commanded John Gauger to suppress the photographs of Jerry Jr. having a high old time at what is apparently a pretty hip-happening, cokey place in South Beach. Gauger was told to make the photos disappear from online searches. He denied that he'd ever tried to get the photos taken offline. But that's after he denied that the photos even existed. But he tried to get John Gauger to make them sync in search results. So if you want to do some citizen activism, go out and search them until you find them. And share them around. Thank you, Flavio. It was Swedish DJ John Dahlbeck with the umlaut over the second A. Dahlbeck, Dahlbach. Where's our buddy? Where's our buddy Scott when we need him? But Jerry Jr. came across all smarmy when he was first notified of it. He said, if you show me the picture, I can probably help you out. I think you're making some incorrect assumptions or have been told false things or seeing something that was photoshopped. But it's still a Ginsu commercial. But wait, there's more. Because part of the Politico article has to do with emails that were provided to the reporter, Mr. Ambrosino, and which have inflamed the ire of Jerry Jr. And he sounds almost as paranoid over at Hill TV today as his bosom buddy, Nitwit Nero. He says that it's a smear job. Employees and board members, they're trying to smear me, Jerry Falwell Jr. And then taking another book out of the Trump playbook. And again, apparently he's not that smart. Because if he'd noticed what happens to this page out of the Trump playbook, you lose. He said, our attorneys have determined that this small group of former board members and employees, they're involved in a criminal conspiracy. They're working together to steal Liberty property in the form of emails and provide them to reporters. Yeah, they got the strawberries. Oh, yeah, this is precious. He said he'd contacted the FBI after he found out reporters were reaching out to Liberty employees to... And one of the pull quotes from the Ambrosino story at Politico is, somebody's got to tell the freaking truth. And Jerry said, oh, Liberty owns every single one of those emails. It's our property. They were working for us when they used our server. And our policies make it clear every email sent on our server is owned by Liberty. And if anybody shares it with anybody outside Liberty, it is theft. And so that's the underlying crime. That's when the Associated Press interviewed Jerry Falwell Jr. Who, being Jerry Falwell Jr., still hasn't learned how to shut the fuck up. He may have John Gouger, and he may have buddies that he's enriched with real estate scams, but he hasn't hired a high-quality lawyer who at least has the nerve, the retainer having been paid and the check having cleared, to say, Jerry, shut the fuck up! The AP reached out to the FBI, and the FBI declined comment. The AP then spoke to Nick Ackerman, a cybercrime expert, who described Jerry Jr.'s allegation of a criminal conspiracy via sharing emails with journalists as, and this is a quote, totally insane. Ackerman went on to tell the Associated Press that ex-board members and employees can share emails with reporters as long as they had authorized access to them and didn't hack into somebody else's account. Said that also includes trade secrets. Is it too much to hope that maybe Jerry Jr. might follow in the footsteps of Jim Baker and do a little club-fed time? Maybe Becky, too, because Becky doesn't come across as a very nice person either. A woman, an employee of FU, had complained about the lack of parking spaces. She worked there and was having a hard time, you know, coming to work because it was hell on earth trying to find a place to park. Becky moved heaven and earth and said, somebody needs to give her a talking to. She doesn't work at FU anymore. But after Becky had announced her displeasure, she was reported back to by some minion who said, we're trying to reach her at home right now, ma'am. We haven't reached her yet. We'll let you know when we do.
Well, we don't say bad things about FU.
She has apparently... dropped the dime on people that she didn't deem to be sufficiently obsequious to her, passing her in the halls. I don't know if you're supposed to kiss the hem of her French maid's petticoat, or kiss a ring, or kiss something, or maybe kiss her hairy toe. But they're those kinds of people. And of course, they're evangelical Christians, so it's no surprise they're those kinds of people. Of course, they'd haul out the guns and the pepper spray at the first first iota of protest. But I'd sure love to see a bunch of people outside the administration building there at FU holding up a sign that said perhaps, oh, I don't know, dance, Trey, dance. Or maybe if the protesters gathered together and played Santana's Dance, Sister, Dance. That would be, oh yeah, delicious. Steve in New York says, oh, dear, dear Bob, it's just club soda with lime. The glow sticks are like the halos of Jeebus Cripes. There's another reference. What was it? I saw a reference to Trump. Cheeto Christ Stupid Czar. That was quality. Earther working the same corner as Steve in New York. Oh, that was only holy water and club soda with ice. Wasn't even neat. Quit it, Bob. Well, but see, they're Southern Baptists, Earther, and they'd catch fire if they got near holy water, because that's all that papist stuff and that Mary worshiping. Arthur adds, yeah, but when the Falwells do it, it's God-fearing. They were discerning the spirits. Steve wants to know, has Jerry Falwell Jr. ended up in another guy's mouth yet? Or has he wound up with a man in his mouth yet? We don't know that for certain, but there's reason to wonder. If you go on your favorite search engine and type in Jerry Falwell Jr. Pool Boy, it will yield up a damned interesting story. I don't think Jer's been able to get John Gouger to suppress that story yet. Oh, and like I said, it keeps on being a Ginsu. There was also the time, and it's reported in the Politico story, that Jer sent John Gouger up to talk to Michael Cohen for the purpose of rigging the CNBC poll of America's most successful businessman on behalf of course, Donald fucking Trump. The Politico story is complete with it. Statement from Jer Jr. saying, oh, there's nothing illegal about that. The nothing illegal about that defense is okay, I guess, for ordinary folks, but for folks who profess to follow the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life and who said, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar, which is another way of saying, don't break the fucking law. Well, that's a horse of a different technicolor. Sorry. That's a back reference to Scary Jerry and the horse at Mokai. Are y'all just that bored down there, Jer? I mean, a horse? Is that because the donkey show in Havana's been closed down? I mean, Tijuana's too far? Hi. So that's the biggest part of that. And I mean, you can tell it was a big festive night. The place is packed. The crowd is boogieing. Jerry Falwell Jr. just sticks out like a sore thumb. And there's a hand in the corner holding up a cigarette. You can smoke in bars in Miami Beach. Maybe that's not a cigarette. Sure looks like a good time. Looks like Jerry's having one, too. Him a-grinning like that. How are you going to keep them in the Blue Ridge once they've seen the wall? You know, there was a time hundreds of years ago. It's referred to as the English Protestant Reformation. And a couple of hundred, and the same thing was going on in the rest of Europe, too. You had vast accumulations of wealth by abbeys and monasteries. You had monks who were supposedly mendicants, having taken a vow of poverty. And they were anything but poverty and chaste. And in fact, their monasteries were places of great wealth and opulence. And when the Reformations came, they came with a vengeance. And in the case of Henry VIII and the English Reformation, he just flat out closed them down and ran the monks off, made them find honest work. Makes you wonder if at some point in time, maybe there will be a backlash in this country against the obscene wealth accumulation of families like the Falwells, or the Copelands, or the Bakers, or the Robertsons. Because those are some serious one percenters. Jerry Falwell Jr. probably has more money, more liquid cash, than Donald Trump can even dream of having. Because remember, all these tax-exempt religious organizations, whose only real purpose is the accumulation of vast amounts of wealth. It's your wealth they're taking. Because tax exemptions are another way of saying that we're going to let certain organizations sponge off the public commons. Jerry Falwell University performs no civic good. I mean, these people, the professors there have to have the express permission of Jerry Falwell for the curriculum that they teach. At Jerry Falwell University, there is no tenure. The one thing that protects academic freedom in this country is the idea of tenure, that once you become a tenured professor, you're awfully hard to get rid of. And that frees up professors to do the kind of work, the kind of scholarship that they might not be able to do if they were subject to the whim of some academic overlord. No tenure at Jerry Falwell. No evolution at Jerry Falwell U either. No big bang in the physics department at Jerry Falwell U. No economics but Republican economics taught at Jerry Falwell U. I'm guessing nobody teaches a seminar on the works of William S. Burroughs in the English department at Jerry Falwell U. Comparative religions? Nope. Not at Jerry Falwell, you. Only to the extent that everybody else is going to hell except people who believe that the way that Jerry Falwell thinks they need to believe. This is theft from we, the people of the United States of America. And you know, our times are different from those of, say, 18th century France. Or 16th century Britain. But we have plenty of hungry people in this country. And Jerry Falwell, you ain't feeding none of them, despite whatever it was that about, you know, feed my sheep or all that Matthew 25 business. No. In point of fact, there's a list. The Trump regime is planning to cut food stamp allotments. According to Robert Reich, the food stamp cuts that the Trump regime envisions, because they want to do this because they gave a horse-gagging load of money to the 1%, and it's got to be paid for on somebody's back, and, well, poor people don't have any lobbyists, and poor people can't take anybody golfing, and poor people can't stay in rooms at Turnberry or get bed bugs at Doral. Well, those food stamp cuts, according to Robert Reich, will immiserate 400,000 people in Texas, where they love them some Trump. It'll shit on 328,000 people in Florida. It will make bellies rumble of 225,000 people in Pennsylvania, 165,000 in Michigan, 118,000 in Wisconsin, 97,000 in Georgia, 176,000 in Washington State, and we haven't even gotten to relatively small-timers like Mississippi, Alabama, West Virginia. Nobody comes out of this okay. But you can't just let the poors run around eating food thinking they've got a right to do that. Question coming in from Trey in Kentucky, Stan. Trey says, doesn't Jerry Falwell use scam students out of federal student loans? Yes, they do. That's another aspect of the commons. There's no space for 100,000 students on the campus of Jerry Falwell U. Oh, they got them an FBS football team. The Jerry Falwell U Nailers or something like that. I don't know. The Fighting Apostles. Who cares? I remember when Oral Roberts and Oral Roberts University were all terribly proud of the high-quality level of basketball played by Oral Roberts University. Him having gone on, I suppose, at some point in time in the great beyond, if it really goes down the way it's described, at some point Jesus looked at old Oral and said, where'd I say build a gymnasium, motherfucker? Since when do you think I care about whether we're playing a man-to-man defense or a full court press or a zone? Oral, I don't give a shit about I don't give a shit about what goes down at the low post. But yeah, they do. They've got 100,000 students, and the vast majority of them are participating in sketchy online college degree programs And God only knows what their graduation rate is like. Very few people actually get in brick and mortar educations. Yeah, something like that. Brother Deacon Asa says, how's that old Roman saying go? If you steal private property, you'll be imprisoned. If you rob the commons, you'll prosper. Can't remember quite the exact language, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's it. That was the phrase. Robert in Australia. Cheeto Christ, stupid czar. A Randy Rainbow song parody. The very thing. And there's the pool boy. Giancarlo Granda. Flavio says, if that doesn't sound like a gigolo's name, I don't know what does. So what's this about a pool boy? In 2012, Falwell and his wife, Becky, she spells it with an I, by the way, visited Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami Beach. While there, they befriended a 21-year-old pool attendant named Giancarlo Granda. Granda soon began traveling with the Falwells, both to their home of Virginia, to hike and hike. Not far from the Appalachian Trail, really. And water ski, according to the Times, into the Chica Lodge in the Florida Keys, according to the Herald. The latter paper published photos of the trip to the Keys, with Granda smiling next to Falwell, the two looking like father and son. Just months after the friendship commenced, the Falwells offered to help Granda, who had practically no business experience whatsoever, helped him set up a venture in Miami. After consulting with his friend Jesus Fernandez Jr., and Fernandez's father, they agreed to open a hostel. Falwell ponied up $1.8 million. Why did Falwell, who was nearly 50 at the time, and his wife invite a 21-year-old hotel pool boy to travel with them on multiple occasions and then put up seven figures for him to open up a hostel in Miami Beach that Politico described as a cesspool of vice? Oh, I think a picture is emerging of old Jer. I'm reminded of the line from that Peter Sellers, as Chance the Gardener, utters in the classic Being There. I like to watch. Maybe Becky likes for him to watch. Maybe Jer stands in a corner, all naked and stuff, with a tennis ball in his mouth, going, ooh! While Giancarlo and Becky discern the Holy Ghost, they know they've discerned him when Becky starts hollering, "Oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God." That's usually how that works, isn't it? So here we are at the halfway point of the program. Big thanks again to Gary and to Jack in Shreveport. Thank you kindly. We're down to $305. And if we can knock out $105, that'll mean Friday, the last $5 of Friday's taken care of, Monday's knocked out, and then we've just got tonight, and that's the $200 that we usually deal with. So I'll cross my fingers. Hope for the best. We all will. And we'll take a little break because I have been remiss in running the Green News Report for a while. And I just hope that, I hope it doesn't send me screaming from the room.
It's Tuesday, September 10, 2019.
We make forecasts. We don't deal with politics.
Trump's repeated lies about Hurricane Dorian balloon into full-blown credibility crisis for NOAA.
Grand Bahama right now is dead.
Dorian's death toll in the Bahamas potentially in the thousands. Plus, Trump DOJ opens antitrust probe into automakers' deal with California.
Ah, the art
of the corrupt antitrust probe. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The day we landed in Miami for the debate, 40,000 acres of a swamp was on fire.
Wait, is Jay Inslee talking about the Everglades or the Trump administration? Take your pick. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I guess we are now at that point in the Trump administration when he's actually lying about the weather.
Yes, unfortunately, that is where we are. But first, Hurricane Dorian is finally headed out to the open ocean after absolutely devastating islands in the Bahamas and grinding along the east coast of the United States. Dorian has now entered the record books as one of the longest duration hurricanes ever recorded. In the Bahamas, rescue and relief efforts are intensifying as personnel and supplies arrive. At least 50 are now confirmed dead as of airtime. But the Bahamas press reports that the final death toll is likely to be much, much higher because thousands remain unaccounted for. And the Trump administration, meanwhile, is denying desperate Bahamian evacuees without documents from entering the United States.
Of course he is. Tens of thousands of people are in need of help. Why would the United States want to help them at all? While Donald Trump is our president.
Here in the United States, President Trump's fixation on his false claim that Alabama would be impacted by Hurricane Dorian has now ballooned into a credibility crisis for NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which oversees the nation's weather agencies. The Birmingham, Alabama office of the National Weather Service corrected Trump's disinformation that had panicked residents. Then Trump doctored a National Weather Service map with a Sharpie to justify his false claims. Now, falsifying an official weather report is illegal. Then, in a statement, NOAA sided with Trump against its own scientists and admonished the Birmingham office for its accurate forecast. Now, new internal documents show NOAA appointees warned staff not to contradict Trump. Trump Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross reportedly threatened to fire top NOAA officials if they didn't publicly disavow the accurate Birmingham office forecast. Now, the acting chief scientist of NOAA, Craig McLean, has opened an investigation, calling the agency's actions, quote, political and a danger to public health and safety.
So NOAA is going to investigate itself and its own leadership somehow?
NOAA scientists are going to investigate NOAA political appointees.
And NOAA scientists are probably going to get fired for that.
It's very possible. It's bad enough to lie to Americans about a life-threatening weather event, but this is deadly serious for the administration to undermine the public's trust in weather forecasts as unbiased, accurate, and not politicized.
Well, there is nothing left but the weather at this point to be politicized by this administration.
At the annual meeting of the National Weather Association on Monday, Association President Paul Schlatter pushed back.
We make forecasts. We don't deal with politics. I mean, our job is to protect the American public with the weather information we pass around. So, of course, it's frustrating when things get politicized, when we're the scientists and the communicators that are delivering the message for weather safety.
In other news, remember that special deal that four major car makers had negotiated with the state of California?
Yes, I do.
They set fuel economy rules that are higher than the standards that the Trump EPA has proposed rolling back. Well, now the Trump Department of Justice has launched an antitrust probe into whether those four car makers violated antitrust laws by agreeing with California to follow higher tailpipe emission standards.
You know, I'm all in favor of using antitrust laws to break up these huge corporations, to break up collusion between the corporations. But the Trump administration seems to be using this for political purposes only, period, not to bring actual justice.
Finally, there is some good news. Marriott Hotels, the world's largest hotel chain, plans to eliminate those little single-use plastic shampoo and lotion bottles and shift to refillable large dispensers at its 7,000 properties worldwide by the end of next year. The move will keep nearly 2 million pounds of plastic, that's about 500 million tiny bottles every year, from ending up in landfills.
So that's about the best news we can have. We're getting rid of those tiny tiny shampoo bottles.
Yeah.
We'll take what we can get. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. And send him on his way.
Lather, rinse, repeat, y'all. Yeah, one little addendum. I mentioned the Fighting Christians of Falwell U, the football team there. Well, Trey in Kentucky Stan provided us a little background. Man, they're all a bunch of sleazy fuckers. Hugh Freeze is the football coach at Jerry Falwell U. He had to resign from Ole Miss for using university-issued cell phones to call sex workers. Well, of course he did. Of course he did. But what have they got to fear? There's no accountability. None whatsoever. Yeah, well. And, you know, Julius Geezer really is caught in seventh grade, maybe sixth. Because in the wake of the news of the firing of John Pornstash Bolton, it was revealed that for months now, he's been calling H.R. McMaster, his second national security advisor, whom he also fired, talking about how much he misses him. It's seventh grade. And you know, can't we be boyfriend, girlfriend again? I miss you. Oh, I thought John Bolton was going to be so much, but he wasn't. Oh, I miss you, HR. Sitting there doodling with his Sharpie on the paper. You know, HR and DT forever. Oh, well, thank you, Herman. The official nickname of FU Athletics, Falwell U Athletics, is the Flames. Flaming Dancers? Maybe somebody told Nitwit Nero about this, and that's how we got flaming. Whew. Oh, the goddess of irony is operating on a subcellular level this evening. Yeah. I'm sorry, I just got it. It's a beautiful thing, Jerry Falwell. You know, if Jerry Falwell wanted to have sex with Becky and they were both hanging upside down from a chandelier, shrieking at each other like bats in a cave, there's not a one of us who would say a word about it. Because that's their business and they're consenting adults, right? Oh, but my goodness. Yeah. You know, we'll throw you out of this university. You're not going to be doing any dancing or drinking while you're here. Well, you know, what happens at the wall stays at the wall, or so they were told. And by the way, we're out more than 600 large just for limousine service for Mike Pencilneck Geek in his little vacation to the Emerald Isle. Here's a question. At what point, you know, because when those Pences were over there, I mean, we're not talking about Northern Ireland. I don't think. Talking about Ireland, the Republic of Ireland. At what point did the Pences turn from good Roman Catholics into weirdo evangelicals? There's a question for the ages. There's ever so much more. But I'm told that there's a mini horn-in going on in San Diego this evening. I'm told that Joe from Cleveland and Billable Rick and Scott have all gathered for some fellowship and good conversation. Is that indeed a fact?
Well, I do, couldn't hear you. We're going to step outside. Hang on, Bob.
Okay.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
What's going on, Rick?
Hey, we're having just finished a nice early dinner here at the Outback, and we're going to step out on the patio and
I like their rare their seared rare tuna appetizer.
Yeah, actually, we had a the onion. What's it called, Joe?
Onion. Oh, the bloomin' onion.
Oh, the bloomin' onion. Yeah.
With
exactly.
With that delightful, slightly spicy sort of ranch kind of dip.
Exactly. Yeah, so we're out here now. Scott is here as well, and Joe. So it's a mini horn reunion, if you want to call it that.
In the beautiful Mission Valley Shopping Center. Come on down. The first
There's a lot going on down here.
Yeah, we got balloons for the kids.
Hey, look, there's John Bolton. John Bolton came. Hey, John.
Oh, there you go.
Hey, he had nothing better to do. He thought he'd show up.
Mr. Pornstash himself.
And free records and free records from the cutout bin.
Oh yeah.
Exactly.
That's a record.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we're having a good time. Scott is a joy to be around, as usual, as he seems over the air as well.
Well, it's always nice when members of the community can meet face to face. Of course, I've met you, Billable Rick, and I've met Joe, but I've never met Scott.
Oh, you guys get along famously, I'm sure.
Well, you know, this goes back years, but there is somewhere in the greater San Diego area, there's a Mexican restaurant that brings in to the restaurant daily that ancient Mexica fermented beverage called pulque, P-U-L-Q-U-E, known to the Mexica as Octli. And it's kind of sticky and semi-sweet and thick and sort of viscous. I guess you'd dare say snotty. But it's always one of those things that I wanted to try just because. Just like I'd like to try the corn beer of the Andes. What's it called? Chicha?
I don't know. That restaurant sounds familiar, but I can't place the name. Like, we were talking about Wyatt Earp, you know, from the American Old West, apparently settled out here at one point and owned a bar, and I was looking online for the name of it but couldn't find it.
It's the oldest in the San Diego Gas Lamp District, and it's got a beautiful, bar and just the fixtures and so forth. It's like a real throwback. Lots of old photos. I like that kind of stuff. You'd love that, Bob. I'll maybe shoot some pictures and send them to you.
Oh, I'd love that.
The wait person took a picture of the three of us. And we'll have 8x10 color glossy photos for sale in the lobby for all of you souvenir hunters.
Yes. You all kick in now.
Did you get the feather?
A bargain basement of $5. Monkey feather.
Did you bring the feather with
you?
Oh,
no, I don't have that.
Oh, I put it on the table in the back.
Let me hold the phone here. Scott is going to retrieve the punky feathers. Oh, no. He brought a couple for me and Joe.
Nice.
Yeah. Punky was quite the guy, you know. He definitely had a lot of personality, contributed a lot to the show, and he certainly was much smarter than your average Trumpanzee.
All right, there we are.
There we go.
Put these in a safe space.
All right, we found them safely retrieved.
Right here.
So there, we give the phone back to Scotty.
Yeah, this speaker on this iPhone is not all that effective. Can you hear us all right?
You're fine. Yeah.
I was reading online that if you need a speaker for, you know, playing back for more than one person, put an earbud in each nostril and open your mouth, and it forms what is effectively a rudimentary speaker. Did you know that, Bob?
I'm not at all surprised.
Cowbell for Scotty.
Cowbell, Bob. There we go.
During our conversation earlier tonight, we awarded Scotty a couple of cowbells already, so he's on a roll today, Bob.
Well, the beers are tall and cold there at the Outback, so.
Yeah, a little bit early in the day for us. We decided to hold off on the beers for now, so I'm going to wait for the ball game for that. The Cubs are playing the Padres, and Joe and I are going, and we were hoping to Shanghai Scotty there, if that's a politically correct term. But
I don't know if I can do that ball game. I would love to, but I have a very bad attention span.
You don't have to watch the game. You go to the talk, Scotty. Don't you know that?
Yeah, I know that. But, you know, people already tell me I talk too goddamn much. You know.
I've got the answer to the question.
Okay.
Aquí es Texcoco.
The Zentide.
Is the name of the place in San Diego. It's actually in Chula Vista. 1040.
Oh, that's the name of the bar.
No. 1043 okay. Broadway in Chula Vista. Aquí es Texcoco, they've got pulque.
Okay, well, 1043. They have shots for that now.
Chula Vista.
Yeah, that's a little south of here.
That's on the border.
No, not quite. Not quite. South of San Diego is National City, and then I think Chula Vista is next.
And damn right. If the food doesn't look just they're famous for their lamb barbacoa.
Yeah, they ask people how is it, and they say not bad.
You guys have been drinking, haven't you?
I decided on the prime rib today, Bob.
Ah, oh, damn, you've already eaten. How long y'all going to be there?
Tonight. The game starts at 7:10. We're going to head back to...
You think they're coming in?
You know, you have time. There's still time. It's, you know, you got 2 hours, Bob.
Hurry up, man. I don't have the space folding skills that Sparky does, so... Damn it. Who are they playing? Who are the Pods playing tonight?
It's the Padres against the Cubbies. And Jose Quintana is a lefty for the Cubs. He's pitching against, an Nolasco guy from San Diego. It's his second game of the year. I think they called him up from the minors. I'm not sure. So it should be good. Should be fun.
I don't really follow baseball. Where are the Padres in the standings? Are they in contention?
They're not like Chula Vista.
Yeah.
The Cubs are like, I think, 77 and 66, and the Padres are like 66 and 77 or something like that.
Okay,
it's inverse.
Bob, I just want you to say one more time that Pompeo is now going to run the White House, and he's the smartest guy to graduate first in his class, right?
Oh, graduated first in his class at West Point.
Could that have been the Trump University of West Point?
Yeah. Yeah, the Trump University.
Because you know they have these offshoot.
Well, you know you get bonus points on your grades there, for being a toe kiss, a bootlick, and a toe kisser, and a suck up.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
I wonder if we ought to wander around. It may not be too early to ask people who they support in the upcoming 2020 season. Yeah, you think we could start some bar fights? I don't know.
We could do some sidewalk surveys a la like Jay Leno or whatever, asking people about, certain things, obvious things about America, like who's vice president. Oh, I'm not sure about that.
Yes, we're on the air to a worldwide audience. Would you like your voice to be heard? That might be the approach.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the Horn family's heard us.
That's true. They're probably be tired of it.
Probably way too much of us.
Hey, Joe, you're not saying much.
Well, I
just Ron and Raleigh is on his usual A game relative to being the ad hoc research department here. Wyatt Earp's bar was the oyster bar with the Poppy Club, a brothel upstairs at 837 Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, I knew it was down on Fifth somewhere.
That sounds right.
Well, Bob, I really think John Bolton's going to resume his porn career with Stormy Daniels. I think it's a perfect connection. You know,
well, let's see. 7:50. Yeah, there went dinner in the mountain time zone.
Well, what do I hear about Sarah and Bob splitting up? Or Sarah and Todd up in Alaska?
Apparently so.
Well, what's up with that? I thought she was in it for the long haul.
Well, I mean, I thought it was a good God fearing, upstanding Bible believing, Christ centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian family values, marriage between one man and one woman and one snow machine.
But apparently not. What about the kids? There's Twig and Todd and Frick and Frack.
Right, and Trip Keyshawn Flapjack Johnson, absolutely. One of the funniest things Bart Kopp ever wrote, Trip Keyshawn Flapjack Johnson.
Say that again.
Trip Keyshawn Flapjack Johnson.
There you go.
We still, I mean, that gag is probably 10 years old, and we're still laughing at it.
Well, how did she land on these names? They say that the American natives, the Native Americans, you know, would get their name by the first thing that the mother saw upon delivering the child. Because, I mean, one of the younger children asked the old chief or whatever, the elder, how he got that his name, and the old elder in the tribe explained it and says, so why do you ask two dogs fucking?
Oh, you're going to hell for it. My personal theory, and I put this out years ago, let me look it up here, but children of Sarah Palin.
Hold it, because I can't get a drink.
For some reason or another, I reached the conclusion. She named her kids after whatever she was drinking when they were conceived.
There you go.
She was apparently drinking. Hey, you guys quit brawling. You're making the phone sound funny. But let's see. Yeah, it sounds like you're just having it out. But no, she. She was apparently drinking Harvey's Bristol Cream when Bristol was conceived.
Okay. Yeah.
What about Trig?
Sounds like a video game she was playing.
Or math homework.
That was as high as she got in math classes.
That's pretty good.
Okay.
What kind of noise is the phone making?
I don't know. You're just wrestling it around and scraping across the microphone and stuff.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Well, that could be the way I'm holding it.
Okay. Maybe we're nearer to the wider bar than we thought.
Can you hear us now, Bob?
Oh, you're fine. You're fine.
Oh, and Chirps the cat doesn't know it, but she's going to get a little leftover filet for her din-din tonight.
Yeah, just chop it up nice and fine.
Yeah, because she's a beef-eating cat, Bob, a beef-eating cat.
I guess it's better than a Methfield squirrel, right?
Methfield squirrel. Well, you know, one of those fuckers tried to jump on me yesterday. This is true. I'm coming back from the grocery store, Bob. And I got two bags of, tote bags full of stuff. And I'm coming up the sidewalk, and I make it round the corner to where the apartment is, come up the steps. And one of those squirrels, since I hadn't fed them earlier, was sitting on the banister giving me the eye, you know. And I was afraid while I was unlocking the door that the little bastard was going to jump on me. and I couldn't get in there quick enough to grab the nuts after a fashion and, you know, come out. And then his other little squirrely friend came down from the palm tree and, you know, they dined sumptuously. They dined sufficient on nuts. But they had a wild look in their eyeball. They were like myth-fueled squirrels. Did we lose Bob?
No, I'm right here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, those squirrels, I'll tell you, you know, when I lived in the valley, there were some real urbanized squirrels. And they get real aggressive. They're sort of like the aggressive panhandlers you get, like, in certain communities, you know. And these suckers actually chewed a hole through the screen door and were able to get inside the house. And they got up on the curtain rods. And my wife at the time was like just saying, Rick, 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 help, help. You know, get the squirrels, get the squirrels. So I got a broom and was able to, like, coax them out of there. But, boy, I tell you, those city squirrels, you got to watch them, man. Those urban squirrels, urban attack meth field squirrels. Watch out for those.
Well, don't forget the Tennessee River meth gators.
That's right.
I'm talking about the gators.
Yeah. You got it. So how are things in West Virginia, Bob? Is it a beautiful day for you?
Oh, it's been exquisite and hotter than hell. It's finally cooling down here in the studio. We're all the way down to 86.
Okay, so...
Oh, you need to come out here, man.
Yeah, it's like 75 here.
Nice breeze.
Yeah. I'll have to put my sweater on later on in the night as the game goes on. So... But who are the Mountaineers playing this week?
Somebody that's going to whip their ass.
Is that Missouri?
No, that was last Saturday's ass whipping.
Oh, did they win or lose?
No, the Mountaineers lost spectacularly. What are you trying to hurt me?
I didn't know. I don't know everything, Bob. You know,
you're making me relive this shit. No, you were watching. You were watching Iowa kick ass and take names.
I did. I watched the highlights anyway. I didn't see the game.
Oh, they looked good.
Yeah, they did. They did. Well, Rutgers. I mean, come on. You know, what do you expect from Rutgers?
Engineers.
You're gonna get hate mail. North Carolina State comes into Mountaineer Field and beats us like we owe them money.
Hmm.
And then. The real pick'em is going to be September 21st when Kansas comes visiting. Kansas that got beaten by an FBS school last week.
Okay, well, you know, Kansas has a way of not doing so well in football.
Yeah, ever since Gale Sayers left, they really haven't done much.
Even then, their team wasn't good record-wise, even with Gale Sayers. You know,
no, but the Mountaineers are... awful this year. Terrible. Horrible. Heartbreaking.
They don't have a quarterback yet to replace what? Was it Will Grier?
Will Grier. Well, it's not just that. They don't have anybody at anything.
Oh.
They came perilously close to setting some really embarrassing records last Saturday.
So let me ask you this. Is there another team that you're going to root for other than Alabama that you're going to, like, adopt since the Mountaineers are, like...
No, I'm every year in and year out, I'm the Mountaineers and the Crimson Tide.
I hear you. Iowa's had some lousy football teams.
There are some that I feel a sense of warmth in. Iowa's one of them because, you know, West Virginia is a land-grant university, and West Virginia was founded on land that was sold in Iowa.
Huh. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. And, well, that was post-Civil War, right? That was a Lincoln idea, right?
Yeah, the Land Grant Act had failed in the Congress before the Civil War, and it had failed because of a bunch of Southerners. But while the South was busy being in rebellion, they got the Morrill Land Grant Act passed, and so the great land-grant university system throughout the United States was created.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's too bad we can't just get rid of the South on a more...
I'd rather rehabilitate it. Reconstruction 2.0 is what I call it.
Hey, we're talking rehabilitation. We're talking Amy Winehouse kind of stuff. I mean, serious rehab, man. I don't know.
It could happen. Maybe if, and I said this, I think, a couple of years ago. If the South could ever experience good government,
uh-huh.
they'd never look back.
Right. I hear it. Joe's on a little walkabout here.
Yeah, what's up?
He's looking for Cleveland fans.
Looking for a homie, you know.
He saw a guy with an Indians hat on. So I guess you find friends wherever you can, right?
Yeah, when you're in my shoes, you're kind of desperate. The Horn family only goes so far, you know.
Yeah, that's true. The Horns.
We're trying to expand the community, but that takes a lot of work on the part of the community itself.
It does. I mean, Bob, I'm heartened that the that the AKE Act got a little bit of shout out at one of those debates or the climate change forum.
That was pretty huge, really.
That was huge. And again, it's probably in no small measure due to, dissemination of the message by members of the community,
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, Brother Deacon Asa with an epic burn of Sarah Palin here. Nothing, addressing this to Scott, nothing weird about Sarah Palin's divorce, Scott. She was already done serving halfway through her marriage. Remember, she was, in fact, the half-wit, half-term governor of Alaska.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, the half-baked Alaska, exactly.
You know, Bob, that was 2008 when she ran with McCain, and it seems like an entire two lifetimes ago. I know, maybe that is the effect of the current occupant on everybody's sense of time and space and continuity.
Yeah, it's 3 years feels like 10 years, you know?
Yeah.
And yet it was just a waypoint, because every time, and it's dangerous when we do this, every time that we say, oh, look, there's the stupidest possible human being ever to be on a Republican ticket, the goddess of irony looks down at us and goes, you just don't learn, do you?
I guess
I'm going to have to show you. So, we thought, and this is, this is long view history, we thought that there could never be anyone more stupid on a Republican ticket than Dan Quayle.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yes.
Potato with an E. I'm going to Latin America. I wish I'd paid more attention to Latin.
That was like 88, wasn't it? 1988.
Yeah, but he knew John F. Kennedy.
And, no, that was Lloyd Benson who knew John F. Kennedy.
That's why I said it.
So we said, that's as dumb as it gets. And the goddess of irony reaches down and gives us George W. Bush.
There you go. Yeah.
And we said, surely this is as stupid as one Republican politician can be. And the goddess of irony said, no, and don't call me Shirley. And handed us Godzilla from Wasilla.
Yeah.
And we say, well, okay, that's definitely the stupidest that any Republican politician. And she said, you don't fucking learn, do you? And sent Donald Trump down that skeevy golden escalator.
Yep. Bob, you have just disproven the theory of evolution. You know that?
Yeah, it's like working retrograde toward... Yeah, we're moving retrograde toward walking on all fours again.
That's right, man.
Sheepolution.
It's crazy. So I've snapped a few photos of us while we've been sitting here, Bob. I'll have to send those to you.
Oh, do please. That'll be fun.
Yeah, definitely. I can only get two of us in one shot, so it's me and Scott and me and Joe, so... Can't reach my. I don't have that selfie stick,
Well, you've got that one that the waitress took in the
Oh, that's Outback. True. Yeah, we have one in the Outback. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Are you sitting on the cubby side of the stadium?
We're actually in a mall, so it's a cubby side because I'm the only Cub fan here, and there's no Padres fans. So yes, I guess it would qualify for. I'm looking at Forever 21. And a gelato place that Joe has his eyes on called Milkissimo Gelato. We're at the Fashion Valley Mall, Scott?
No, this is Mission Valley Mall.
Oh, Mission Valley Mall. We're not too far from the old San Diego Stadium, Qualcomm
right,
Field,
yeah.
Where the Chargers used to play.
Yeah, and the Padres
played.
Well, actually, they tell me, it was before I got here, back in the late 70s, early 80s. Right now where we're sitting used to be part of a large dairy farm where cows would roam, you know, grazing grass or whatever they grazed back in that day. You know, California cows, that they got to give them grass. But anyway.
Which reminds me, I've got to find a grass shop around here.
Oh, well, you've come to the right place. Will you tell Bob what my button says?
Yeah. Scott has a button that says, you've heard this, Bob, a mind is a terrible thing to confuse with an egg.
Yes. Dude, you going to eat that?
This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs.
On drugs, right, yeah.
Oh, God, you can't hardly swing a cat without hitting a pot shop in San Diego. I mean, you'd have to ask the cat. But
well, before one swings a cat, be sure it's declawed, okay? That's my advice.
You're going to get hate mail. There's a lot of cat lovers in this community.
I am, too. I got four of them, Bob. Joe can attest to that.
Yeah. What kind of feedback did you get from yesterday, Bob, about the vocabulary police? Because I listened to that, you know, where you can't use any language for fear of upsetting somebody. And I understand the point. You don't want to be deliberately hurtful. But, I mean, this is why there are
words.
Well,
the consensus seems to be intellectual disability.
Okay.
And if it's from birth, it's congenital. That means he's been stupid all his fucking life.
Well, there is a condition, and I know this because a friend of mine had it. She was a couple of years older than me, but she was born with literally a birth defect where she didn't have the entirety of her brain. And I forget what the condition is called, but I believe water is part of the description.
Hydrocephaly?
That might have been it. But she...
Hydrocephalic, could that be?
That's a modification on hydrocephaly.
All I know is she wasn't really expected to do well as a child or a teenager or an adult. And she ended up graduating from Duke University.
Jeez.
And worked on Capitol Hill for a couple of years and then, you know, went into another line of work. I mean, I don't know if... Well, she didn't seem to be challenged. I mean, when I knew her, she didn't seem to be challenged in any, measurable way, as near as I could tell. But, you know, with Trump, I mean, it's obvious that he's not together. I mean, he's, what was that expression I used yesterday? He's profoundly unwell on any scientific scale you care to consult. And that, to me, is one way of putting it that kind of gets the point across.
So is ignoramus something that can't be used, Bob? Is that the consensus?
Hey, that's got a Latin ending, so I'm guessing that's out, too. Imbecile, ignoramus, moron, idiot.
damn it.
But I'm not giving up Moran Monday because they invented that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Get a brain,
right.
Get a brain morans.
Moran is not really moron. It's just a play on moron, so... I think you're okay there, Bob. You don't have to change the name of your Monday program to, intellectually disabled Monday.
Right, that they invented. That's the whole point. They invented it.
Well, no, I thought Bugs Bunny you popularized that term, Moran.
No, that's Maroon.
Oh.
Oh, okay. All right.
Huh. Oh, geez.
Do you know that I hold the distinction in the Horn family? Well, one of many, but one in particular that I'm thinking about. I have met, either on phone or in person, not only the voice of Clarence Ducky Nash, I met him in person, who was the voice of Donald Duck. I was going down to get my check from the radio station one payday, and the door opens, this old man walks out, little teeny tiny man, holding a giant Donald Duck puppet. And I'm thinking, good God, has the station gone Disney? You know, what the fuck's going on? And he starts moving the duck's mouth, got his hand up the duck's butt, moving Donald's mouth, talking Donald gibberish, which I never, from kidhood to adulthood, could understand a goddamn thing that duck was saying, okay? So there's that. Okay. But apparently he was
on acid, I wonder?
I don't know. He was on Main Street in Kansas City at the time. But no, apparently he was there as part of a tie-in to a week-long remote the station was doing from Walt Disney World back in the 80s. So there's that. And then a couple of years later, I did a phone interview with Mel Blanc, who did all of the Warner Brothers character voices. And did you know that Mel Blanc and Estelle, his wife, had a child, Noel Blanc, which when you take Noel and Blanc in French, that means White Christmas. And they were a nice Jewish family. So how do you figure that? I don't. I still can't get my head around it.
Well, you've got, you could have had one more member of your little horn in over on Twitter. I just heard from O Pipe Down. Shit, I'm missing it. I can see Mission Valley from where I am.
Oh, wow.
and was right on it. Yeah, Pulque, aquí es Texcoco, I think. Not far from the stadium.
Oh, geez. Okay, well, maybe
up in New York City, Eileen says, these guys are having way too much fun. I want to play with them.
Well, there's plenty of room on the bench.
Well, I'm looking at Forever 21 right here outside of the Outback. So we've got about 50 minutes, 40 minutes left in the program. Y'all come on, get down here. And
Hot dogs and balloons sit on for the bench. Kids.
We're just sitting on a bench here like three old guys.
At least until the lady from Outback comes out and chases us with a didgeridoo, if you don't mind.
Boomerang.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, those boomerangs.
All right, you sat on our Outback bench long enough. It's time to move along, Blacks.
Cousin Crikey.
Yep, that's Cousin Crocodile Kincaid.
We recommend our sparkling vintage. Got a kick on it like an Aborigine's armpit it does. After a fashion. That's an old Monty Pythonism.
Oh, geez.
Joe, you got to talk to Bob. He's right here.
Well, I'm a little disappointed in Australia. Their biggest coral reef is dead. They've got a dictator for a president or whatever they call him. And I'm kind of worried about the old down under.
Well, as you get older, many men are worried about the old down under.
Man, I knew. Yeah, the old down under makes you get up and go pee about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Sorry.
So I'd say we're getting close to spoiling the Western region, Western time.
No. We just put a shot right across Pacific, the Pacific time zone supper here.
Yeah.
Well, I was wondering why Rick didn't bring Tracy down. They call.
Damn, that would have been a party.
Oh yeah, we would be drinking if Tracy was here.
Well, she could have come along with us to the game. She seemed like she was had a day off. She went to a movie today, and Joe and I had.
Tuesday's movie day.
Yeah. Joe and I had a nice conversation with her on the way down to San Diego, and I guess Joe and Tracy are going to get together. Joe's here for another, what, another 9 days or so, right, Joe?
Yeah, I'll be here about a week.
He's got a little over a week.
So oh, hold on. So wait, Joe, there's a chance we can get a pool K review from you?
Oh,
sure. Why not? I like to play pool.
No, pool K, damn it. For anyone wondering, it is the fermented sap of the maguey plant.
Wow.
Okay.
Who are you calling a fermented sap? Your coach?
So it's Chula Vista we got to go to. Okay. I wonder how late the restaurant's open. Probably can't make it tonight, Bob.
Yeah, probably. No, no.
That's for another trip.
Yeah,
it's for another trip. I'll tell you what, we'll put that in the bucket list and mark that
food,
down.
The food looks simply amazing.
Oh.
The barbacoa lamb? Whoa.
Ooh. Oh, my God. So you're online looking at this, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Boy.
Aquí es Texcoco. Texcoco.
Huh.
Although I don't know what Spanish does with that X.
I don't know.
In the original language, it's an SH sound.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds really interesting. We'll have to check that out maybe next time. Maybe next time, Bob. But we will probably go to Wyatt Earp's bar maybe after the game. I don't know if we'll have time before the game. We'll see. And take some photos.
Yeah, don't drink at the game. Nobody can afford that.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll drink at the bar.
It's Taco Tuesday, so maybe.
Well, actually, Joe has some. What do you have? You got some tequila and some vodka with you, so.
I did, yeah.
I should have had a wineskin. Maybe we could have smuggled the wineskin in.
Well, you had
and
some
mixed
on the
it
way
with
down.
The Cokes.
What'd you put your orange juice
it's,
to?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Joe had to stop at the Rite Aid on the way down to San Diego, and I was at the lovely Stars place last night, and he picked me up there. And so I had orange juice to go in a cup. And he, like, came out of the store and had all this liquor, you know, like...
I don't know how that happened.
You know, probably enough to get an army drunk. And, you know, tequila and vodka. And he says it's for his wife because she's coming down in a day or two.
The Grand Marnier's for
him. Oh, you got the Grand Marnier. Okay. And so he suggested, oh, why don't you mix some vodka with your orange juice? I thought about it. I said, well, let me look at the clock. Okay, it's 12:30. That's fine. I can do it.
It's an afternoon.
It's the afternoon.
Sun's up. Mail's in. Somebody's birthday somewhere. Never drink without a reason.
That's right. It's always 5 o'clock somewhere. Why not start the happy hour early, right?
Well, I have a recommendation for the vodka drinkers out there.
Okay.
And it comes by our dear friend Joy up in Ann Arbor. And Joy is a transplanted Texan. And she highly recommends a brand called Deep Eddy, DeepEddy.
Yes.
And they do flavored vodkas, but it's not like those sweet, sticky, nasty, no. Smirnoff, New Amsterdam, no. These are made with all that, and they do a peach, and they do a cranberry, they do a lemon, and an orange, and a grapefruit.
It's called Deep Eddy, Eddy.
Yeah,
I've seen ads for
that. They actually sponsored some concerts in Santa Monica on the boardwalk. I think it was a couple summers ago on a Thursday, and guess who I saw there for free?
Who's that?
I saw Eric Burdon and the New Animals.
Oh wow!
Yeah, yeah, it was a great show. The old animals have all died, so he had to adopt new ones at the shelter. For his band.
Too.
Oh, well, wait a minute. I just received a clapback email including the claps from Tracy. It reads as follows. I was not invited. And she adds, besides, there's only so much male whiteness this sister can take. Love, love the Grand Negress.
Tracy, it doesn't rub off. You come on, get closer, baby.
Not all of us like mayonnaise, Tracy.
Well, I still want to know how you're going to make crab cakes without a little mayonnaise. But never mind.
Isn't that Deep Eddy made in Texas?
Yeah, it's made in Austin.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. That I knew I had heard of it. I just do they only sell flavored?
No, they've got They've got a plain. They've got a plain, but there's only 5% alcohol difference between the flavored and the plain.
Yeah. Okay.
And the Joy is partial to the grapefruit and the lemon.
Nice. You know, I think Austin must be becoming a hotbed of vodka distilleries, because there's another very fine vodka that is made.
Tito's.
You know what that is?
Tito's.
Tito's, yeah.
And
yeah.
And the founder of Deep Eddy and the founder of Tito's are pals.
Oh.
And they came to a parting of the ways because the Deep Eddy person wanted to do flavors and the Tito's guy just wanted to do vodka.
Okay. Well.
And so they agreed to disagree, but it's not like they get in bar brawls and break bottles to see what each other had for lunch.
Okay, well, that's good. It's always important to be civilized, you know.
Yeah, David in South Carolina Stan just said, "Yep, favorite vodka, Deep Eddy."
Yeah, Deep Eddy is good, and they were handing out free sunglasses, so I had some free sunglasses with Deep Eddy on the side until they broke because my head is so fat, you know.
Well, a bartender friend of mine told me about something called an Orange Crush.
Ooh.
And that's the Deep Eddy orange vodka and a half a shot of triple sec.
Ooh.
Fresh squeezed orange juice. It doesn't work if you use, you know, out of a bottle.
Yeah.
And then you top it with something that sparkles, either club soda or a little Sprite, or, and this works surprisingly well, either squirt or Fresca.
Huh. That sounds good. I'll have to remember that recipe.
Okay, for those who were in the pool to predict what time Joe would go over to the gelato stand across the way here, whoever had 526 wins the pot.
And Scott, tell us what's in the pot tonight.
More pot.
Yeah.
It's a bubblegum rutabaga kush hybrid with something they shook out of the carpet under the Lazy Boy.
Why, this is a bag of shit. But it's really great shit, Mrs. Presky. Tell her what she's won.
Yeah, Tracy says, "I don't believe you about the mayonnaise." It's true. If you're going to make crab cakes, you got to have a little mayo. You got to have a beaten egg. And you got to have a little breadcrumbs. Otherwise, it just won't hold together.
Oh, yeah. Binder.
Yeah.
I've known people, and this is heresy, who have actually used Miracle Whip.
Ooh.
Jesus.
Oh.
That's just nasty.
How crazy do you have to be to ruin a perfectly good, you know, gathering of lump crab meat with Miracle Whip, Bob? I mean,
you know, I normally don't believe in the death penalty, Scott, but, you know, for something like that, you know.
By the way, we courtesy of Lee in New York, we have a new name for the Orange Crush cocktail. Also known as the Harangutan Looking at Ivanka.
Oh. Oh, geez.
Oh, that's just nasty. Can you see him hoisting the schooner and going, "You remind me of Ivanka."
Yes, exactly. Oh, God. Oh, man. It's we were talking about how it's just so unbelievable that we've got him as the supposed leader of the free world.
I've got a note here. I probably won't make it, but I'm going to drive down and look for him. They are.
Well, they got about
that's from
half an hour.
That's from O Pipe Down on Twitter. Well, they're loitering and engaging in general vagrancy outside the Outback. Is that correct?
Yeah, in a little while there's a bunch of kiddie rides. You know, the little train and the little horsey and the little go kart around the way here. There's a change machine we can stack up on quarters. So if you don't see us on the bench, we'll be over there riding the kiddie cars. Oh, good Lord, gelato.
Oh, geez. Thank you, Joe.
It's messed up gelato.
Wow.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
You know something? I have never.
Did I just hear messed gelato. Up gelato?
Yep. It looks good. Looks like.
Thank you, Joe. Sure.
Yeah, see, this kind of goes back to what Tracy keeps talking about with my epic tour of the left coast. You know, we start in San Diego and work our way north and don't quit till we get to Vancouver.
Well, I was just going to ask you, Bob, you know, I don't know how long we've been on today, but this should inspire you to figure out some way to do an on the road.
Oh, it inspires the hell out of me.
Oh, you just can't swing it.
It is not the inspiration I'm lacking. You know, this would be the point in the program where I mentioned that Gary and Jack in Shreveport made sure to take us down from 405 to 305, and it's been crickets ever since. So, you know, it's the getting there that's the real challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've blown all our cash on steak, ball games, and gelato, Bob, so... But
well, yeah, and kitty and kitty rides.
No, I said kitty rides, not kitty rides.
No. Okay, not a T, Bob. Come on, where's your mind?
They let y'all drink in there, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. Hey, let's get wasted and call Bob.
Well, actually, we didn't. I was thinking the beers looked awfully good. They had the Sam Adams Oktoberfest on tap. I love that stuff.
Oh no! If you go to the Outback, you have to get the Grande Fosters in the mug.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true.
Where the frost forms on the ice crust forms on the head of the beer.
Yeah, yeah, that's nice. That's nice.
You say cheers.
Yeah. So
here's to old Crocodile Kincaid.
There you go. So we're like sitting on a bench equidistant from Forever 21 and the gelato place, looking at like a place where a sign for Bloomingdale's. So that's sort of where we're at. So, you know, just kind of your standard mall, you know. Yeah, it's outdoor mall, lots of people walking by. Everybody, of course, has a horn hat on, Bob, as you know.
Thank you.
Oh, that would be nice if they were wearing horn hats.
Well, in all seriousness, Bob, and not unlike malls all over America, when I first came to San Diego almost 20 years ago, and also during previous visits in the mid to late 80s, or the late 80s, I should say, you know, there was barely room to swing a shopping bag without hitting Shoppers at this very mall. There were no vacant stores.
I thought that was the one. Yeah, I thought that was the one that was pretty nearly a ghost town.
Well, one of them, another one, which is in downtown San Diego, Horton Plaza, is even worse. They have basically sold that. There's a grocery store there, but they're converting it to, I think, some sort of technology hub. And I think there's going to be an educational training place and something else connected with, you know, computer technologies. And it's really crazy that, you know, because malls were big in the 70s and 80s. I mean,
just ask Roy Tullamore.
Well,
he knows all about it.
But I'm sure there were like waiting lists of retailers and local businesses who wanted mall space and couldn't get it, and they were like paying premium rent, I'm sure. And it's sad, and to my mind,
well, it's an evolutionary process because the malls killed downtowns.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the internet came along and killed the malls.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
so I guess the question is, what's going to kill the internet, Bob?
Trump. Everything he touches dies.
That's true. Yeah, it does. It does.
No, actually, something closer to a serious answer is social media, because social media is going to eventually cause the internet to be deeply suppressed.
How will that work?
Yeah, you're going to have like a Great Wall of China in the U.S. or what?
Well, I mean, there's always the great firewall of China. And by the way, Dr. Bill had Professor Kevin Shanley on this afternoon, and they talked China policy for 2 solid hours, and it was absolutely riveting.
Dr. Bill is a rare find, Bob. I mean, what a smart individual. He knows so much about so many different things, not just a historian, but also a, he stays current as well with, current events and, trends and things like that. He's amazing.
And when he's in his expert space, there's nobody like him in America. Period.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Lady B says Scott's on a roll. Next thing you know, he'll be telling us to try the waitress and tip the veal.
Try the waitress and tip the veal.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Jesus, you people.
I don't think I haven't done that in a previous incarnation. I was a bit of a wild child.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So do you think, Bob, do you think Hong Kong can free itself or be out of the clutches of Beijing?
No.
Any chance?
No. In fact, if you get the podcast today, Dr. Shanley lays out with machine-like precision the conundrum that faces Xi Jinping. And he doesn't have any good answers. Because if he goes light on Hong Kong, there's somebody waiting behind him who will be happy to watch him sprout daggers from his back.
they've got their own pence over there, don't they?
And if he goes lightly on them, or if he represses them rather brutally, then a whole bunch of that money's just going to pick up and go, "Hi, Singapore," and Singapore will be happy to have them.
So is he just going to keep it at a low level of unrest, or what's he going to do? Not that he can control it.
Well, in some ways, the young students are sort of in the driver's seat. He may wait for them to just, and I'm not being dismissive, but you know how it was with the hippies here.
Yeah.
It was all, free love and I don't want my ass in the war and hell no, I won't go. And then they grew up and started voting Republican.
Yeah, that's true.
Dumb shits.
That's what happens. It's part of the aging process. If you get to a point where you got a little money, you want a little bit more.
Right.
And that'll take the fire out of a hell of a lot of revolutionary zeal.
Mm-hmm. Well, at one point, and I can never remember whether it was Jerry Rubin or Abby Hoffman, one of them was actually working on Wall Street. Do you recall?
It was Jerry Rubin? Yeah.
And couldn't.
Hoffman was in hiding for a long time, I think.
You couldn't get more, up against the wall revolutionary than Rubin and Hoffman, both members of the infamous Chicago Seven, at once eight, but diminished or decreased to seven when was it Bobby Seale wanted his own trial?
Didn't they put a...
Okay,
oh, they gagged him.
The party may be expanding by one because our correspondent is headed down Texas Street now.
Oh, he's almost here, Bob.
Cool. Well, we're just outside of Forever 21 and near the Milchismo Gelato place, and Joe was nice enough to get us. I had chocolate chip.
That was very good. Thank you.
I forget what it was called.
It was good though, like chocolate chip. Yeah, it's delicious. So, I'm all primed now for a game pretty soon here. This is going to be fun.
Well, you've had most of the four food groups. The only thing left is booze.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But
I've had some, but Joe has to catch up.
Well, this thing, Bob,
one can't hurt you.
With Hong Kong, you know, and God bless the students, because I'm telling you, not only over there, but over here and in parts of Europe and other countries as well, it's the young people that are going to keep the rest of us on an even keel, because they have a very low tolerance for bullshit or hypocrisy or nonsense or repression or any of that stuff. And while my generation, many of whom were, you know, old enough or young enough to be, you know, hippies and yippies and stuff, we were also boomers. Where we were coming, born and raised in the 50s and growing up in the 60s, a lot of us were spoiled rotten because of the way the U.S. economy was in the wake of World War II, all throughout the 50s and the go-go 60s. Our parents were deprived, and some of our grandparents were deprived, but we didn't grow up in that era. So we would tend to flip, if you will, from thing to thing and flower to flower. I don't get that from today's youth around the world. I get that they are very committed human beings because they know what's at stake. Not to get all serious and stuff, but they know the score is what I'm saying. Does that make sense, or could I be wrong about this?
I'm not saying you're wrong, but it could be that you're over romanticizing them.
Well, think of the courage and the commitment that it has to, that is required. How long have these Hong Kong things been going on now? A month? Up against tear gas and rubber bullets and water hoses and God knows what else.
Yeah.
They're
at least into the fifth week, I think. Weeks long now. The thing that amazes me is there's so little news reporting about that, you know?
That's it.
Right? And it's so important, you know?
Hello?
Yeah, well, I just merged a call in with this one. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, it's Carl from Western Mass.
Hey, what's happening, Carl?
I just wanted a quick one. You were talking about a few minutes ago about this is your brain on drugs.
Yeah.
Thing. I just seen a meme today. This is your brain on Fox News.
Oh.
Had an overview of a stove. One of the burners was lit. There was a frying pan on the other burner, not the one that was lit. And there were two eggs not in the frying pan. They were just thrown on the stove.
God, that's about
all
it.
Right,
that's about
now.
Right. Hey, thanks, Carl. Good to hear from
all
you.
All right, I'll let you go now.
Yeah. Later now.
Yeah.
Hey, Carl, take care.
Is that Carl from Sling Blade?
No, that was Carl from Western Mass.
Hold on, there's a guy moving some refuse in a noisy cart.
There we go.
In case you're wondering what that horrendous goddamn noise was. Jesus. It's them squirrels, Bob, them myth-fueled squirrels. Hold that for me, would you?
Sure, absolutely. So I like that meme or the thing that Carl came up with. That's very clever, you know, or that thing he saw anyway. So
Fox on crack.
Yeah. This is your brain on Fox News or whatever. So
just a couple of cracked eggs on top of an unheated stove.
Yeah.
completely missed the pan.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lee in New York says, subject line Hong Kong, the students know about Tiananmen Square and they don't want to repeat. The Chinese government knows about Tiananmen Square and expect to be able to repeat it. But it's bad shit if they try to drop the hammer.
Yeah. Yeah.
But one of the things that Dr. Shanley and Dr. Bill came to the conclusion of is that in either instance, China is figuring whatever it does, that we'll just kind of sit back and not do anything, because you know it's not really worth you know roasting the world over.
So Bob, what is Taiwan? How do they play a part? I mean, in this whole thing.
Well, that's the other long term thorn in China's side, because the official communist Chinese, yeah, they're communists, right? Position is that Taiwan is a renegade, rebel, breakaway state.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, the whole reason for making a deal over Hong Kong and their position relative to Taiwan, and Horst could living there could probably speak to this a lot more eloquently, is that they want to control everything in their sphere of influence, because as is the case with Hong Kong, you know, Hong Kong was a British protectorate because it was a colony going back to the Opium Wars.
Right.
And China wants all Western power out of its sphere of influence entirely.
You got that right. Yeah, it's a vestige of colonialism, the Hong Kong colony, you know? Well, the former colony, it's no longer a colony. I mean, I knew when they made the promise in, what, 97 to, you know, have, like, two systems, one China, whatever the hell they called it, you know?
Yeah.
And giving Hong Kong a certain degree of autonomy. I knew that was going to last, you know, not very long at all. And, you know, what, it's been about 20 years. That's going to be about its lifespan, 22 years now. So, you know, you cannot... You know, the Chi-Coms, I'll call them Chi-Coms, as Rush used to call them, they cannot be trusted. They're just,
Charlie,
you know,
Tree and the Chi-Coms own Bill Clinton.
yeah, that's right. But now they're our friends, right? They're Trump friends or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of China, I guess now would be as good a time as any for an update. Where are them jobs, Bob, that old Trumper was going to bring back? Where are them jobs?
Them tariffs will work.
Yeah.
Coal jobs. I want to mine like my daddy and granddaddy did, Bob. Come on. Clean coal, man. That's where it's at. That's the future.
Jesus, yeah. Sadly, there are still people who believe that crazy shit.
Of course, there are. Yeah. I mean, the Trump's trade war is just a total disaster. He's taken an economy that was booming, and we're on the edge right now, and I think people are starting to feel it. You know, as far
yeah, he's
as,
running. Well, he's running into a ditch.
Right. Exactly. The guy, I mean, he bankrupts everything he touches. He kills everything he touches, you know?
Well, my best expression for him, and I never knew it or envisioned actually applying it to it as the chief executive, was an old expression my dad used to use when I was growing up, describing someone as a bull in a china shop. What he doesn't break, he shits on. Now, I mean, is that pretty apt for Mr. T? And I don't mean I pity the fool, Mr. T. I mean Mr. DJT, Bob. DJT.
Blaga, baby.
Mike Merrick is stupid again.
That's right.
Jesus.
Well, let's see now. Today's Tuesday. What night is the debate? Is it Wednesday or Thursday?
Thursday. The next pageant is Thursday.
The pageant, I'm sorry. And there'll be how many? 10?
Got 10.
Yep.
So with the reduced number
Tulsi would have won. Tulsi would have won.
With reduced panel of candidates, there will be time for a swimsuit and a talent competition, right? Because I've been hoping for that. I want to see somebody with flaming batons and a sequined outfit. Now, I know, granted, burning should have more fucking dignity than that, but, you know, this is America, boys and girls.
Well, you know, maybe Bernie can read, for the talent portion, maybe Bernie can read that passage where he in the essay he wrote where he gratuitously used that word that has all the same letters as ginger.
Oh, he used the actual word?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dear.
In writing what? About in writing about white working class resentment.
And
I mean, it wasn't quoting anybody. He just used the word.
This is a recent piece he wrote?
It's 20 years old.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, I get the point. But where were we all 20 years ago? What was that? 19, what is it now? 2019? So 20 years ago was...
99.
Or 1999. Yeah, I can see where there was white working class frustration.
Yeah, but I can see describing it. I cannot see gratuitously using that word.
Can you use it replacing ginger instead? Because I'd love to hear the quote, because this is the first time hearing of this.
This was just on Earth, Bob?
I've seen it mentioned. I've seen it mentioned a few times. So it. let me pull it up here.
Bernie. 20 years ago. Yeah. I don't think it's going to matter, Bob. I don't think Bernie's.
Bernie will get. He'll get a pass for it. There's no doubt about it.
I think it's between Elizabeth Warren and Biden.
Hey!
Let's see.
Yeah. Hey. Nice to meet you. Oh. Tamara just joined us. Here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Scott. I'm Rick, Tamara. I'm billable Rick. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Tamara, say something.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Tamara. The little horn end just grew by one.
Yeah. Took me a little while, but I made it into
that. Right.
I'm glad.
Hey.
Where'd you come from?
Well, come on, I just live up the street. I was saying I could literally don't you go ahead and talk.
Come on, come on,
yeah. You can see it from there. Yeah. So Tamara's joined us here on the bench. Here we got to get a here. We got to get a photo. So here you go.
More pictures. People are gonna talk.
No, it's okay. Oh, here we're gonna get a photo here. Me, Scott, and Tamara.
Hey.
Here, turn the volume on.
Oh, you're on delay there.
We got to turn that off, or I'm going to lose my mind.
She just turned it off. She was on delay.
Turn the radio down.
Okay, here we go.
Cleveland, hello.
There you go, Scott. Take over.
Finally.
Wow.
Okay, so you're...
You native?
I was raised here, yeah. How about you? From L.A. Cleveland.
All right.
I'm in San Diego, but I'm not from here.
There we go.
Oh, this is wonderful.
This is kind of orgasmic. I'm like,
you know, this ought to inspire other horn family members
to be horny.
Just yelled at three strange men if they're horny.
They got laws against that in a decent town like San Diego.
All around the country and the world, three or four horn family members should gather together at a mall and call in once a week.
Well, wherever three or four members of the horn family community congregation are gathered together in my name, there too I also am with them.
No, Bob, that's Wednesday night. That's Wednesday night. You're the wrong night.
Damn it.
But... this was very different. If we can't get you here one way, we'll get you here through the magic of Skype and bring the whole family with us.
I think it's fan-freaking-tastic.
The emails have been good. We've been, like, bogarting the line tonight. But this is not something that's done all the time.
No, this is this is wonderful. This just tells me how much fun it could be if we ever actually get to pull together a real live, honest to Jesus, no kidding, horn in.
Yeah, and everybody has their clothes on still.
Now, if we had been thinking, we could have brought a banner, an official horn banner, and balloons, and little giveaways for the kids.
And records from the cutout. And records from the cutout bin. Absolutely.
Yeah. Of course, now the mall authorities would have rounded us up and taken us, and we would have gone to mall jail. But, you know.
Freedom!
Because, I mean, it's one thing to hear the people as disembodied voices on the front porch or on the regular show. But, I mean, to meet Joe and Rick, finally, who I know from the horn, and Tamara, I mean, you just can't beat it to have a 3D experience with someone of like mind and attitude and commitment. Or maybe it's just me. I don't know.
I'd dearly love to be there. Lady B just said, "Sounds like them horn boys are up to no good." If you see a Ford Prius with a marijuana leaf painted on the hood, and two middle-aged and a young white guy cruising around town at 5 miles an hour, you'll know they progressed to mushrooms. Seriously, though, guys, have a great fucking time. Get a designated driver and be safe. God, I love the Horn family, Lady B says.
Well, great. We wish she was here. Lady B is, I love some of the things that she says. They challenge me, you know, because sometimes I get complacent in my own, you know, liberal mindset or whatever. And, but I have never, I mean, we share a radio background, but I've been Caucasian all my life, you know. I can relate to an extent, you know, when Tracy expresses what's going on and Lady B does and other people do. But you don't really know it until you've been there. And I guess that's true in different ways for all of us. But this is really cool. And I'm really honestly surprised that the... I got a whisper here, my offstage announcer voice. I am surprised that the Outback people have not come out with a broom to chase us.
Oh, it's Southern California, man. They're mellow.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to hand the phone over to Rick.
Well, I'm going to ring off because we're at the end of things here. Hey, Tamara, I'm so glad you found him.
It's amazing. Yes.
I mean, three old guys sitting on a bench outside of an Outback. What are the odds of, you know, us being someone else, right?
Well, yeah.
Well, I mean, we gave pretty good directions.
Yeah. Yeah, very good.
The only thing that would have gone farther to give it away is if you'd all been riding the kitty, the little kitty rides.
No kitty rides, actually.
And then the Outback people would have come out and run you off.
Yeah, yes, they would have.
Don't tell Mike Malloy, but he's in for a surprise. We're going to go get our quarters and go over to the kiddie rides around the way and guest star on his show next.
He doesn't take calls, though.
Well, hey, on the way out the door, a little bit of an announcement, breaking news courtesy of Steve in New York. Steve says, cautious optimism. With 76 out of 210 precincts, that's 36% of precincts reporting, Dan McCready in North Carolina leads Dan Bishop 50.4% to 49.1%.
Ah, okay.
The Libertarian candidate has garnered 0.4%, and the Greenie has garnered 0.2%.
Okay, well, that's good that the Libertarian's out polling the Greenie.
And how much of the count is in?
36%, 37%.
I guess it all depends on where the votes are being counted. Probably in the more rural areas, typically. It takes longer for the city votes to get tallied.
Well,
usually.
Remember, this district encompasses a chunk of Charlotte.
Oh, yeah, and Charlotte's a pretty forward-thinking area.
Well, depends on what precincts they're coming from. I'm sure that the campaign people for both sides, for each of the sides, has a better idea as to what their candidates' chances are.
Well, there are a bunch of counties in the district. Charlotte-Mecklenburg is obviously the largest one, and they're showing 19,264 for McCready to 12,553 for Bishop. And that's 2% reporting.
No, that's not
that's not good.
what time did they finish voting? 7 or 8?
I'd say probably 7:30. Seven thirty, something like that.
Yeah.
So it's got to be about a 63-37 margin or so, right?
Well, yeah, but see, for instance, 88% of Richmond County is in, and Bishop is leading McCready McCready there, but they're 88% in, whereas 100% of Scotland County is in, and McCready won that one 36-44 to 28-04. And so there's only three counties: Union County, Richmond County, and Bladen County, where Bishop is in the lead. McCready's in the lead in every other county.
That's great. Well, let's hope that all the national attention that the Adipost Rex or whatever and Pence have given the area backfires on him.
He was so far out of it last night. He said, "There are hundreds of people outside standing in the rain, desperate to get in." Well, the place wasn't even full, and outside was sunny and dry.
That's what I was going to say.
Jesus, this guy...
He's gone.
With the map of the hurricane, I was thinking, well, Donnie, if this president thing don't work out, you can be a weatherman. But there goes that idea with this. Oh, they're standing out in the rain. Oh, this just in. It's sunny.
Yeah.
You know? It's like this guy is on a different planet. But my question about this race, this House race, special race in North Carolina, is this the last election of the 2018 cycle, or is this the first election of the 2020 cycle?
Well, it's certainly being treated as a referendum on Trump in real time. And that's why he was so desperate to get down there and campaign. I mean, it's only happening because the Republicans, being Republicans, cheated and suppressed votes and stole ballots and got stone cold busted for doing it in the 2018 campaign.
Yeah.
And if there had been any justice to it, McCready simply would have been named the winner when the Republican victor was found to have cheated and lied like a rug and, people going to prison and shit like that. That's the obvious answer. Not giving the goddamn Republicans, the goddamn cheating Republicans, a second bite of the apple.
And it's not unheard of that chicanery, when proven, has had a direct bearing on the validity of an election.
Nope.
I mean... Am I right on that? Because now, granted, it didn't work very well in 2000, okay? But, I mean, there have been other local elections where people they operate with better sense, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I think that's a fair assessment. But in this particular case, it was straight up proven dirty. And still, the Republicans managed to get a second bite at the apple, because I guess IOKIYAR.
Well, there is that.
And then they didn't let the guy who won by cheating, they didn't let him have the nomination to run again. So whoever wins this is going to have to run again in 20.
Not too far off.
No, up to and including a primary.
Yeah, another year. another year away.
I need one of those fuzzy boom microphones like you see them thrust in the face of Trump. Those Trouble with Tribble.
Yeah, that's actually called a dead cat.
Okay, because seriously, we've got Joe on this side, me here, Tamara here, and Rick way down the end. Even as a retired taffy puller with extraordinarily long arms, I can't reach that far. Take the phone, Rick.
Well, I got to get out of here. You guys have a blast. Enjoy the remainder of your evening, and enjoy the ball game. That's another unique moment here in Horn history, a mini Horn-in on the bench outside the Outback in San Diego. Thanks, guys. That was a blast. And thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air with your kind contributions. Thank you this evening to Gary and Jack. Thank you to all our subscribers. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little ongoing conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, marking 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia this year. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.